Greetings, everybody. We are going to talk about, in this particular video, this thing called the cell danger response. And there's a good chance that this particular video is going to be one of the more boring ones. However, what you're about to hear is vitally important because it has everything to do with weight loss resistance, with chronic disease, and with things that we can actually do something about if we understand what the cell danger response is and what to do about it. But don't worry, I'm going to lace in lab tests and things that you can look at to understand why this is happening to your cells and understand better what to do about it. So the term cell danger response was coined by Dr. Robert Naveau of University of California back in 2013. He said that the cell danger response is the evolutionary conserved metabolic response that protects cells and hosts from harm. It is triggered by encounters with chemical, physical, or biological threats that exceed the cellular capacity for homeostasis. So if we said that in English, we'd say a cell that is under stress will stop working in order to protect itself or themselves. So why does this go against the current paradigm? First off, let's look at this. Hey, our body, our entire body is actually made up of systems, such as respiratory system, circulatory system, musculoskeletal system, etc. Those systems are made up of organs. The organs are made up of tissue. Hey, and tissue is made up of individual cells. And if we break the cells down, I could put organelles in there, and those organelles will be made up of atoms, which are eventually made up of energy. So our entire body is made up of nothing but energy. But currently, in the reductionistic Western medicine, they stop at the tissue and then compartmentalize everything. This is why we have specialties in Western medicine. You have, you know, neurology for the brain, you have endocrinology for the hormones, orthopedics for the musculoskeletal system, and specifically the joints, urology for, you know, your urinary tract, etc. So it's all compartmentalized and it stops at the tissue. And then some of the medications or whatever will affect the cells, but they're only looking at the tissue. They don't take it any deeper than that. Whereas a holistic approach, we're going to look at the entire organism all the way to energy. And are the cells producing energy the way they should? And if a cell is under the cell danger response, the answer to that is no. So what are the stressors that contribute to the cell danger response? There's nine of them I want to talk about. Number one is diet. I'm not going to get real deep into diet today just because y'all that are listening to this are probably already part of our metabolic reset program. You're already eating a way that will keep these cells from going into danger response. So we'll spend a little time here, but not a lot. If you're not part of our metabolic reset program, I don't know what you're waiting for. That's all I'll say about that. Number two is sleep. Not getting adequate sleep causes stress to the cells. Number three is respiration, as in breathing in and breathing out, that type of respiration. Number four is super important with emotional. Number five is physical. Number six is habitual. Seven are your daily habits. Number seven is your environment. Number eight is metabolic. And then nine is genetic. And I put it at the end of the list for a reason. Not everything that we don't know how to deal with is genetic, and I'll explain that a little bit more. So when you look at chronic disease, let's just say that we're looking at Alzheimer's, and we're going to go into a specific Alzheimer's case. To be fair, I made this case up, so I created a character and said he had Alzheimer's. We're going to follow him through his life, and we're going to look at each one of these stressing factors that contributed to this case of Alzheimer's. But you can really do this with any condition, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, stroke, etc. We could really break it down and look at these nine factors, and we could start to extrapolate information from there. So to be fair, and I think I do note this later, there is a great book. It's called The Thyroid Debacle. I'll post a link to this book in the notes, but this is from my friends, Dr. Eric Balkavich and Dr. Kelly Halderman. They came up with what they call stress factors. That's what these are that contribute to the cell danger response. So all kudos to them. I'll link to that book in here. So let's look at Alzheimer's. Our fictitious character, his name was John, and I put him as being born in 1959 because the average age of Alzheimer's diagnosis is 65 years old, and 65 years ago today was 1959. So from 19 to the time he was born, I don't know why that says 56, from pre-birth, I guess we could count pre-birth depending on mom's health status, up through his childhood through adolescence. So basically John was born in a suburban town just like Idaho Falls. He received all of his childhood vaccinations. He attended local schools. He ate school lunch and he excelled academically. So we're already talking about food just in, you know, this young man's first 14 years of life where he's eating local food. So, all right, eating food at local schools. He's been active in sports, particularly football, and he's getting regular exercise. And he did have some minor head injuries during football, but his diet starts to shift from home-cooked meals to fast food and TV dinners with home-cooked meals on Sundays. So if you look at what's happening in the 50s, we're starting to go away from using good fats like lard and tallow, and we're starting to use more industrialized fats like Crisco. And then all of a sudden we have this advent of these convenience foods like fast foods and TV dinners. So John here is starting to eat more of those and less home-cooked meals, which are reserved for Sundays. This is all important. Remember, diet's a big part of this, and that's why I'm bringing this up. And then from the 80s and 90s, from his adulthood to middle age, we enter the low-fat era, where fat has been demonized. So all of a sudden sugar consumption goes up, fat consumption goes down, but meanwhile, John's going to college, he earns his degree in business. He starts a career in sales and involves a lot of travel. So when you're traveling, you're out of your natural environment. Sleep's probably disrupted. Marries in his late 20s, starts a family. That'll increase stress. Meanwhile, he's maintaining a busy lifestyle, balancing work and family commitments, consuming a little bit of alcohol at social gatherings. So that's the habitual part of this. And then occasional smoking during stressful periods. And then begins experiencing stress-related issues due to demanded work environment. So work is stressed out. All of this is contributing to this cell danger response for John. And then sleep declines as well as exercise habit. He eats more fast food, more convenience food. And he gains 40 pounds based on cholesterol medication. This is a pretty average case. Hey, sugar is replaced by high fructose corn syrup. Corn, soy, and processed wheat are now staples of his diet. And then he starts to get his annual flu shots, which is a factor in this particular case. So 2000s to 2010, we're pushing towards retirement, which I want to point out, the average American, half of us will have some sort of chronic disease by the time it is time to retire, which is sad to me. But in late adulthood, Wi-Fi and cell phone use is now ubiquitous. Things like Febreze are household names. So we get fragrances that are disrupting hormones. We have Wi-Fi and cell phone use, which are disrupting some metabolic factors there. But John here, he continues to climb the corporate ladder, becomes a successful executive. He continues to lead a fast-paced lifestyle, takes frequent business trips. His stress, his work responsibilities go up, so do his stressors. He's now told that he's pre-diabetic. The doctor kind of brushes that off. It's not a big deal. Just tells him to eat less and work more. He has no exercise, no change in diet. No time for hobbies, no time for relaxation, very limited exercise. I said that already. His marriage is stressful. Sleep is not important. He adopts that mentality of I'll sleep when I'm dead. And then he starts to begin occasional memory lapses and forgetfulness in his 50s, walking into rooms, forgetting why he's there. So basically what's happening with our friend John here is his cells are now under all these stressful factors, and it's starting to reflect in his brain where he's starting to have memory lapses and walking into rooms and forgetting while he's there because all those cells inside of his brain are starting to shut down because of the stress. And then he retires early due to cognitive decline, memory problems, and then just blows it off as a normal part of aging, saying it's hell to get old. And then he continues his yearly flu shots. Hey, 2020 into later life now. His memory problems are worse. It's affecting his daily life and relationship. He's having difficulty managing his money. Family members are starting to notice significant changes. He goes under medical evaluations, diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in his 60s, and then requires assistance with daily activities as the disease progresses. His family provides caregiver support, but eventually John requires professional care in a specialized facility. So once you get into specialized facilities, your diet's worse than ever. M&Ms are staples. Diet Coke is a health food, takes every vaccination recommended by his doctor, gets no sun, no muscle tone because he wasn't exercising, and finally, he's admitted into a home because those cells are just not working anymore. He cannot function as a human being. And unfortunately, when we get to this point for John, this is going to be his retirement if he survives. So the question is, could we have saved him? Could we have saved John? The short answer is yes, if we would have had made significant lifestyle changes and paid close attention to what I'm about to share with you. Okay, so looking back, let's look at those nine factors. Number one being diet. What if we would have gotten a hold of John in the early 2000s and started making a significant change? Hey, for not for, how do I say this? It's there is a point of no return for some people. It might get to the point where you're too far gone. There's nothing that we can do. But it's important to recognize this early, no matter what the disease process is. I just use Alzheimer's here. But anyway, these fitness factors all play a role. So number one, diet. Nutrition plays a huge role in cellular function and overall health. If I said this in a short way, you know, everything you put in your mouth, your body turns it into itself and energy. So when you eat a banana, you're going to make energy out of that banana, and then your body's going to take the building blocks of that banana to make other cells. Okay, so if you're eating a staple of whole food and animal protein, then that's what your eyeballs and cells are going to be made out of. If you're eating Doritos and corn chips, then that's what you're going to be made out of. That increases oxidative stress, it increases inflammation, leads to metabolic dysfunction, and makes this whole process worse. So this is the most important part of the cell danger response, is understanding the role diet plays in all of this. So you need to consider here food sensitivity testing. If you haven't done these tests yet, there's a lot of value in these tests. My opinion is they are worth the money. Unfortunately, our medical system is broken, so not a lot of these get covered by insurance, but it is good information to know if we're going to build a case for you to have longevity, to have long-term health. Hey, number two is sleep. I noted in there in John's case that he had the attitude of, I'll sleep when I'm dead. And unfortunately, that's a bad way to think about it, because when you're sleep deprived, you're going to disrupt your cellular homeostasis, or your cells being happy. You're going to have impaired metabolic processes. Your immune function is going to be decreased. Your neurotransmitters are going to be messed up, leading to mental health issues. You don't have a chance to clean yourself out, your cells to clean themselves out while you're sleeping. Okay? That'll increase inflammation, increase oxidative stress, and it's going to make those cells shut down inside of you that will eventually lead to disease. So when considering this, there's a couple things I want you to think about. Number one, adrenal stress profiles. These are very easy saliva tests that we can run to look at your circadian rhythm. You can go talk to the good folks at Sleep Better Idaho Falls. They've got some awesome help there that's non-medication, non-device sleep to help improve how much oxygen you're getting at night. You need to look at mattress quality. I don't endorse one mattress or another. I am a fan of organic mattresses, however. No caffeine after midnight, sleep in a dark or cold room, organic sheets, turn your Wi-Fi off, and also consider some of the electromagnetic field radiation, EMF radiation mitigation techniques as well. That's what turning your Wi-Fi is all about. There's also devices available that will help you to not have so much electromagnetic radiation in your house disrupting your cellular function. So that's sleep. Number three is respiration. When you're under stress, like John was, you have a tendency of being a shallow breather. That's going to increase carbon dioxide in your blood, makes you more acidic, and makes metabolic issues really, really tough. We frankly don't know how to breathe. Okay? So what I suggest you do is learn this technique called box breathing. There's plenty of help on YouTube, just free breathing techniques. You can look up those up on YouTube. And teach yourself how to breathe so you're getting adequate oxygen. Then look at your cleaning supplies. A lot of cleaning supplies have nasty chemicals in there that will disrupt how you breathe. Look at air filtration for your home, putting an air filter in your home. labs. Talented clinicians can pick this up on standard lab tests. There are arterial blood gases that you can use, but they do have a tendency of being, and same thing with spirometry. They have a tendency of being expensive. Unless you have a diagnosed issue, then insurance won't pay for those particular tests. So, but they are something you can look at. If there's any questions at all on this, just please reach out to me. I'd love to sit down, look at your blood tests, and give you my opinion. Meanwhile, just figure out this whole box breathing thing and put a practice into play where you're breathing, where you are purposely box breathing 3 times a day, because that's going to help you out immensely. Okay, number 4 is the emotional side of this. Emotional is huge. Emotional stress exerts profound effects on cellular physiology through intricate interplay between the nerves, endocrine, and immune systems. Prolonged exposure to stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline can dysregulate cellular signaling pathways. It's just stress or emotional stress, whether or not you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, the chemical response is going to be the same. It's going to lead to that cell danger response. But there are ways to combat that. Box breathing, we've already talked about. Meditation, learn how to meditate. You can do it. I did it on YouTube for free. Just look up meditation and go down that rabbit hole. But also, here's my plug for counseling. Counseling is absolutely huge. This is a profound thing that's going to help a lot of people. I've been through counseling. I continue to go to counseling. It's an amazing tool that we have in our quiver if we use it appropriately. Number 5 is physical exercise. This is a potent modulator of cellular health. It promotes mitochondrial biogenesis, antioxidant defenses, and so forth. But it's important that excessive or insufficient physical activity can include cellular stress, can cause those cells going to cell danger response. So you got to find where your rhythm is. It's hard to overdo it, but people do. And you see this in marathon runners and endurance athletes who get themselves sick because they just go too hard. Most people are not working out enough. I will say that. So movement and muscle tone are the number one predictors in health. The more you've exercised, the bigger your muscles are, the less likely you're going to develop something like Alzheimer's. So it's very, very important to do this. John, from our case, he did not do this. He was under a ton of stress, didn't make time for exercise, and you can see where it got him. Hey, number 6 is habitual. These are your daily habits and routines. These have a profound influence on your stress levels. So things like chronic exposure to environmental toxins, such as air pollution, pesticides, industrial chemicals, all these things can disrupt your metabolic health. Poor lifestyle habits, including smoking, excessive alcohol, drug use, make this even worse. They increase the risk of diseases such as cancer, liver disease, neurodegenerative disorder. So what we do here is make a habit of getting rid of soda, sticking to organic food, using clean cleaners. We've done whole videos like this on that. Air filtration, water filtration, looking at your personal care products. I did a post earlier this week about men looking at our deodorant and cologne because the chemicals in there are messing up our hormone levels, and they're also messing up your partner's hormone levels. So these are things you all got to dig into under the habitual side of this if you're truly going to be well. Number 7 is environmental. Our surroundings play a significant role in shaping our environmental health. Exposure to environmental stressors such as UV radiation, ionizing radiation, and EMF can damage cellular structures. This is where we got to work on EMF mitigation techniques, air filtration, water filtration, and healthy sun exposure. There is such thing as healthy sun exposure. Hey, we'll do whole videos on this later. Maybe I'll do those. I got a trip coming up to Florida. Maybe I'll do some videos on it then. So those are the things you need to look at when it comes to environmental. Lastly is metabolic. When your health gets bad enough, then you're going to have some dysregulation of metabolic pathways, such as insulin resistance, dyslipidemia, which is having your blood, your lipids profiles off. Glucose intolerance is a huge one. Some people call that, I like to call it insulin or glucose resistance, not insulin resistance. All these can promote cellular stress, increase inflammation, and all of them can actually be reversed if you're doing the right things with your food. And with exercise. So some lab tests to consider are your basic blood tests, food sensitivity testing, omega-3 to 6 ratios. All of these play key factors in this process. So you want to pay attention to those. Last but not least is genetic. The genetic side of this is not what you think it is. Hey, you don't have diabetes, type 2 diabetes, because your mom had type 2 diabetes because her mom had type 2 diabetes. A lot of people have those issues, and that's just one example. A lot of people have those issues because they ate the way their parents ate, and they developed the habits of the way their parents did. So what I'm talking about genetics, what I'm talking about are the factors that play roles in determining susceptibility to cellular stress. There's variations in genes that exist that affect the encoding of antioxidants, enzymes, DNA repair, cellular signaling molecules, all these things that we can look at. If I put this in the simplest terms possible, you may have a genetic variant that makes it so you can't absorb certain forms of vitamin B. So it doesn't matter how much vitamin B that you take. If you're not absorbing it because your genetics are off, you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money, you're wasting your metabolic. So that's why we use this particular test here, this DNA RX genetic testing. Simple tests can give us a lot of very, very valuable information about how we can absolutely maximize your health and wellness. So that's all I've got for you. Now that you know better, it's up to you to do better. I encourage you to leave your questions below. If you've liked this video, I realize it's boring, but if you've liked it, I appreciate you sticking with me this long. If you have questions, reach out below. Make sure you like and share these videos to help as many people as we can. So thanks so much for spending this few minutes with me. We'll see you guys on the next video.